John Paul Morosi from MLB Network is with us first. Morosi, how are you?
I'm doing outstanding. 1 week from today, my friends. In fact, basically 1 week from today, they'll be taking batting practice at Rogers Center, I believe. Or actually, they'll be underway at an earlier start this year. So yeah. They'll be playing their Rogers Center. J. Happ on the mound against the Yankees.
Not surprised that J. Happ gets the start in this one. But do you think this is based on merit, or is this based on, well, everybody else has had a start in this rotation, let's give him one on opening day?
I think it's a combination. He is the most experienced starter on the staff based on major league service time. He's made the most starts in his career, I think, from that standpoint. So he's got that experience edge. And he's been, you look at the overall signing, Bob, of what they spent to get him two off seasons ago, and they have to be pretty pleased. I think he's done a very nice job for them, solid, maybe not celebrated as often as you would expect somebody with those numbers, at least in the last several years. But he's done a very, very good job for this team. I do think it's a bit of a tip of the cap to him. And from a veteran standpoint, you could have easily gone with a Marco Estrada. I do think, Bob, they wanted to have that sign of restraint, maybe, if you will, and not quite give it to Sanchez yet, coming off of the injury plague season. But I saw Sanchez pitch last week. He looks excellent. There's a lot to like about where Sanchez is right now, and Stroman getting back on the mound, a very good sign, too. So the Jays' rotation overall is in a better place than maybe I expected it to be when spring training began.
Where would you rate this starting rotation? In terms of the teams in Major League Baseball, all of them, all of the starting rotations.
It's a great question. I would say, Bob, it's a little above average. A little above average. I wouldn't say that it's one of the elite ones, at least not yet. It certainly can be. If we're going to say that we will see 60 starts combined between Stroman and Sanchez, and that you'll see Happ do about what he's done, then I'm feeling pretty bullish about what this rotation could do. And Garcia has shown certainly some signs. And as we talked about last week, Bob, the Yankees have some concerns. This is a team that could go anywhere from winning the World Series and being dominant to having CC Sabathia slow down because of his age, and Tanaka have a UCL problem because we know of the partial tear, and Montgomery shows some signs of not developing in his second year. So I would say above average, not elite, but with the overall capability to get there if Stroman and Sanchez combine for 60 starts.
All right, not to dwell on this, but who's got the best rotation in baseball?
The best rotation in baseball. I would say this. The Washington Nationals, when they are clicking, when they have everything lined up, and you see Scherzer, and you see Strasburg, and Gio Gonzalez was an all-star caliber pitcher last year, that's a hard one to beat. The Astros are unique because of their depth, and now you see Verlander and Gerrit Cole. Of course, at this time last year, Verlander's a Tiger and Cole's a Pirate. So it's a very different-looking rotation for the Astros now than what they had last year in spring training, and of course they won the World Series. So I would say it's between the Nationals and Astros, and just based on the way things finished up last year and the depth that you saw from the Astros with the ability to run different pitchers in there between the bullpen and the rotation, I would give a slight edge to the Astros over the Nationals. But in my mind, those are the two elite rotations right now.
Grange, jump in.
I wanted to ask John Paul about the story he wrote about Curtis Granderson and what you've seen spending a few days around the Jays and what he may bring based on your experience.
Well, Michael, it's interesting, and thanks for asking. I think Curtis is one of the people I enjoy being around in this game the most. He has not changed in his demeanor. I was lucky to be around him his first full season in the big leagues now 12 years ago with the Tigers, and the way that he walks into the clubhouse, the way that he talks to me, talks to his teammates, it's all the same, and that's to his credit. He has not lost his enthusiasm for the game. He has gone to New York and played for two different teams there, and it never seemed as though the grind or the pressure of playing there has gotten to him. He has been to the World Series now with three different teams, the Tigers, the Mets, and last year the Dodgers. He still has a really good numbers against righty pitching with some power, and he's shown that again this spring. And it was interesting in talking to Ross Atkins, and Ross knew him as an opponent. Of course, they were both in the AL Central a decade ago, and Ross had heard so many great things about Curtis personally, and he described it to me as if you've heard so much about this movie, and yet the reality of the movie and how great it is even better than what you expected. It exceeded the expectations. And Curtis, from a personal standpoint, has been that way. And hearing certainly multiple people now around the Jays telling me that Curtis has had such a positive impact on just the way the clubhouse feels right now, a very upbeat vibe, and he's been a very good mentor to young players in his career. He has been, I know it's spring training, but in terms of the presence that they wanted to bring in, he has been precisely what the Jays thought they were getting and perhaps even more.
Why do you think that's important?
Because the year is so long. And there's a great discussion, and Joey Votto has weighed in, Michael, in spring training about the value of a winning culture. And does a winning mentality exist? It's that great chicken or the egg discussion that we could all have about all sports, about where culture comes from, and can you possibly have a winning culture precede the existence of talented players that can win games? And I think we've seen a lot of times in baseball in recent years, the Royals were one such example. It's a lot easier to do it when you've got a homegrown group that grows together and that sort of has ownership in each other's success. It's a very hard thing to have, but it's a very real thing when it exists. And I think that when you walk into a locker room, a clubhouse, you can tell those teams that have that investment in each other. It's a little harder to do it through a veteran player towards the end of his career, but Curtis, with just the way that he conducts himself, the professional way about him, I think has an effect. And I really think, Michael, in baseball, certainly culture matters in different ways in your clubhouse or your locker room in different sports. But baseball, because of the grind, because you spend literally 8 months of your year, nine if you're lucky, with the same people every single day, having people that are able to be friends with different groups of people, as simple and basic as that may sound, it matters. And you can walk into a clubhouse. There was one team I walked into a clubhouse in spring training at like 8:30 in the morning, and the room was silent. Everybody was on their phones, and basically no one was talking. That, to me, is not the type of place I'd want to work in every day. Curtis Granderson, with the way that he treats people, whether it's the clubhouse staff, whether it's the coaching staff, it's his teammates, it matters. And it adds a certain vitality to the room that over a long season, long road trips, tough games, long games, it matters, it adds up, and I think it has a positive effect.
Do you have an opinion on how many games you think Granderson can play? At his age, 37 years old, I mean, in theory, he can play 162. We don't expect that. We expect something of a platoon. But how many do you think he can play, and then how much does he have to perform on the field in order to command the same respect in the room?
It's a great question, Bob. And I think that the second part, I guess I'll answer first. He has to just put together the same quality at-bats that he always has. And I think his spot on the team is not to, although he's going to potentially lead off a fair amount against right-handed pitching, he has not been brought into Toronto to carry the team. He has been brought in to be a complementary piece, although, again, if you're batting leadoff, it's a pretty prominent position, at least, again, against right-handed pitching. I think it's the quality of the at-bats that has to be put forth. I think the Bautista, for example, his numbers in the last couple years were not what you would have expected or saw for a long period of time with the Jays, but leading by example, working an at-bat, I think he did do a lot of what the Jays had expected from him. Maybe the production wasn't there, but the quality of the at-bats were there. And I think with Curtis, yeah, you have to see results. As long as his OPS is somewhere around the 740 and up range, I think that's plenty high enough for him to still be looked upon as a leader. And obviously, if it's 739, it's not that he's any less of a leader, but that's just about what it feels like to me for him to have that on-field, off-field leadership. Because, again, you probably have to hit around that level to just continue to be on the field. And it is harder to lead when you're not playing every day. I've seen players do it. Raul Abanez did it with the Royals in 2014. Johnny Gomes has done it as a part-time player. You can do it. It's challenging. And I think the number of games to be played, he is almost never, I believe, going to start against lefty pitching or really be in the lineup in those games. So I think if he's playing around 110, 115 games, including some times off the bench. That's about right. That's about right. And the Jays now, Bob, are in a spot where once Anthony Alford comes back from his injury, and it was really a tough injury timing-wise because he had really started to put himself on the map. Teoscar Hernandez, we know, probably behind Steve Pearce because of contractual reasons. But they've got enough outfield depth that Curtis probably does have to put up some pretty solid numbers to keep a hold of that roster spot well into the season, because it's going to get crowded out there, and I'm not sure if infield-wise, with all the shifting around there at shortstop, and we'll see what Smoke ends up doing, I'm not sure if the infield is going to hit enough collectively outside of Donaldson to really allow the Jays to carry a more defensive-oriented outfield for long stretches of the year.
Just looking west for a second, JP, the you know, so much hype about Ohtani that the Angels signed out of Japan, and you know, the word is kind of, he at this point, he kind of looks like any other prospect. They're not really clear what he's gonna bring. There's some now conflict about his ability to pitch against major leaguers. Is all this going to get smoothed out, or has there been a massive overcalculation made here?
Well, Michael, we're going to know a lot more in a couple of days. And I don't want to put too much on one spring outing, but he is scheduled to pitch again on Saturday. And we'll see if he's starting to make the adjustments. If he struggles again, and he really struggled against the Rockies, their A lineup went out there over the weekend and really, really had a lot of success against him. Big inning, home runs by Desmond and Arenado. He just had a hard time locating the ball. Didn't really look confident on the mound either from a standpoint of body language. So I would need to see something more from him on Saturday. But here's the tricky part about this. He's got to show them at least something. And I think if he shows them enough, if it's a 50-50 call, they'll start him in the big leagues for two reasons. Number one, they have reconfigured their entire rotation for him. They went to a six-man rotation. That was their plan all along, to find a way to get his arm in the rotation, his bat in the lineup, make sure he has enough time off, make sure he's not overtaxed coming over from Japan in his first year. So they've entirely set up their rotation based on him. And to make a decision 3 days before opening day or so that, oh my goodness, he's not ready, would require a profound backflip on all of the things that they had set in place. Also, Michael, I would say this too. We cannot underestimate the notion to which Ohtani is a huge part of the Angels from a business standpoint. Sponsorships that have been signed with companies, especially Japanese companies, were done so with the understanding that they were going to have a Japanese star playing in front of all these billboards, and his games are going to be on the air in Japan when he makes his start every week. Happen, I think the business office and the baseball office are going to have a bit of a conversation. There's going to be some pretty difficult dialogue to occur there. So a lot is on the line. I think, again, tie goes to him going to the big leagues. But, Michael, this is a difficult situation, and offensively it has been a real struggle. Three hits, I believe, entering today, all singles. So the approach of the plate has not been what you would expect of a major league star, let alone a major league regular either.
Hang on a sec. If Ohtani is a bust, at least coming out of the gate, it will save the Angels' bacon, because this six-man rotation idea is about the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. And if they have to go to five-man rotation, it's not the end of the world, for God's sakes. They just go back to what they've been doing for three decades. So, you know, I don't really see this as a big issue, other than what are you going to do with the kid if he's right, not good enough to pitch and he can't hit well enough? Can they send him to AAA?
They can, and certainly from a roster standpoint, they're lucky that he signed a minor league contract. The rules of the game now are such that by rule, he had to sign a minor league deal with a signing bonus. And so he's on a minor league deal with an invite, just like any other prospect would be from a standpoint of the major league rules. So, yes, they could send him down. But, again, then you would be going to Salt Lake City, which is not a good place to pitch. Good place to hit, bad place to pitch because of the altitude and the air there. So this could very quickly become a really confounding situation for the Angels, unless he starts to show some signs. This, fortunately for them, from a pitching standpoint, the stuff is there. He is the pitches will play. He is not locating right now. His confidence, his ability to I think, withstand the adversity of a major league inning at this point in time has been a bit of a struggle, but the pitches are all there. He can pitch at the major league level. I think there's not much question about that. He just has to locate and manage the innings once the traffic starts at the bases. But all these things, Bob, you think about it, and you come over, you cross the Pacific, you've got the hopes and dreams of your country riding on your shoulders, and you struggle. And then you wonder, where do you turn next? Now, I've been told he's been a very good teammate. He's been engaging with his teammates. So that's a very good sign that it's not as though the struggles have gotten to him in that regard with the way he's relating to his teammates. All things positive in that regard. But he just has to perform better. And offensively, Bob, it just looks like he's not letting it loose with his A swing. I've seen some videos from him in the past. He's got power. We're not seeing those power swings. He's like feeling for the ball, a little hesitant at the plate, and that to me has me a little concerned. And as I said, you wonder if he crosses that Rubicon and goes to the minor leagues, how does he mentally handle being down there at AAA? You're flying commercial. It's a very different mode than the big league life he's been used to in Japan, and certainly so far in spring training. The question of how he responds to that, Bob, we just don't know. And that's why I think the Angels want to give him every chance to have a good outing on Saturday and keep him in the big leagues.
Is there a crying desire for Major League Baseball in London, England? Because it looks like Major League Baseball's going to go ahead and play some regular season games, Yankees, Red Sox. I didn't know that there was a demand there for it. Did you?
They're going to find out. MLB is going to find out. And I think that a couple of things. They've done some events there from a commercial standpoint, marketing standpoint. They believe that, and again, it's all unofficial, so it has not been officially announced yet, but obviously reports are this looks likely to occur. MLB, I think, in their best-case scenario, looks at this and says, okay, maybe there is a curiosity there for baseball in Europe that you would have compared to the way that maybe your average American sports fan would have regarded soccer 30 years ago, and maybe there was a growth potential there. Obviously, they're probably not playing baseball in England on the same level that we were playing it from a standpoint of participation here in the States 30 years ago, and certainly not now, but it doesn't take that much. I think for it to be a meaningful endeavor from a sponsorship standpoint, MLB there's been some successful European camps and clinics in the past. Players have come certainly through the Netherlands and in Italy. Alex Liddy was the first ever drafted and developed or signed and developed player rather from Italy. You've seen players come out of Germany as well. So there is, I think, more of a baseball culture in Europe than we would think. And interestingly, I found interesting just following some social media accounts of sort of UK baseball fans that are gathering together in London to watch these games. Now you're seeing MLB sign this deal with Facebook to stream games now exclusively, and you wonder now, are we going to see bars and pubs in London where you've got baseball fans gathering and watching these streaming broadcasts there? Of course, it'll be in prime time because those games are afternoon games here in the States. So it's all, I think, primitive if you want to compare it to the way that it looks for American fans watching EPL games and the excitement that you see there. But there's enough of a foundation there, and certainly linguistically easier to translate a game. It's all in the same language. So I think they're going to find out some of the success we've seen other leagues take their regular season games to London and to Europe. So I think baseball for baseball, it's really the next logical step.
Yeah, maybe. I'm a little tired of this traveling road show that all these North American sports are doing. Like, you want to go to Mexico, which Major League Baseball has, or Japan or Puerto Rico or even Australia. There is at least baseball being played in those countries. There have been players come over from Australia. While baseball isn't the number one sport by any stretch of the imagination in Australia, at least there have been some Australian kids that have grown up playing ball there and come over and made it in the major leagues, and some reasonably prominent. The history of British baseball is, well, to the best of my knowledge, there isn't any, is there? And
well, I'll say this. Actually, Bob, you'd be somewhat surprised. Now, I will invoke my favorite tournament, but it's true. There actually was a British team.
Yeah, how many of them
participated
play, wait
in the qualifiers for the World Baseball Classic?
How many of them played in England?
There is an English league. I will look up that number, Bob, and when next we talk, I will have that number for you. There are a number of the players that are from that have British passports or
exactly.
are from British territories or sort of relationship
exactly.
in that regard that allow them to play
yeah.
for Britain, similar to, in some respects, with what happens with the Dutch team, for example, with Curaçao and Aruba. But there is a league. There is a league in England. I can tell you there is a baseball league there. How good is it? I've never seen it, so I can't speak to that. But there is baseball played there. And, of course, if you look at the overall origins of the game, right, if you think about cricket and rounders and how baseball came to be played, there are some threads that you would say go back to the U.K. So I think maybe of a historical nature, Bob, you could actually say London is an optimal place to go if you want to celebrate the very true origins of the game.
Oh, it's a cash grab. That's all it is.
It's all JP.
You know
JP.
And I know.
This is JP looking for a trip.
Yeah. Well, I blame you. Yeah.
You're looking for a trip.
Looking for a free trip to England.
I think I did a pretty good job of tying it all back together. It's the origin.
Not
of
really.
The old bat and ball sport, cricket. It was okay.
Not really. Get a third opinion on it, and we'll see how that turns out. We got to go.
I'm going to get that number for you. Native-born players on the British national baseball team. I'm going to find that number for you. I will have that next time we talk. I promise.
Thank you, pal. I'll be looking forward to that. I don't think I can sleep. John Paul Morosi of MLB Network.